Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Thunderbirds are go.
Well, that's an unusual way of starting it, isn't it? But we'll keep that in, because I've never seen Kieran so cheery. Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. One day we'll do the price of 70s super marination. That's the pod producer guy really wants to make. Kieran, you're very chipper. I'm taking it then that your 2 days in Belgium has had an uplifting effect on you.
Yeah, it was amazing. We did one of these audio walking tours because I'm quite antisocial and didn't like the idea of hanging around with a bunch of other people, myself and the Baroness. And it was sensational because you would be walking and you say, now look up to the right. And you go, Jesus Christ, there's yet another cartoon inscribed on the wall. Amazing city. Lots of waffles, lots of chocolate. And the most bizarre place we visited was a bar where they also did axe throwing, which I thought was, and you go into, it's a bit like going into cricket nets. So they give you some axes and a target and you start lobbing axes. And I'm thinking, yeah, after a few scoops, as you know, I don't drink. After a few scoops, I'm not sure this is necessarily going to pass health and safety back home. But in Belgium, they trust you to do it.
Well, I'm glad that was the bizarrest place you went to, Kieran, because quite often that sentence, the most bizarre place I went to in Brussels, can take you to a completely different scenario. it's Newsday, Kieran, and let's start with a big news story of the week, and this is Nottingham Forest appealing their points deduction. Now, by way of a change, Kieran, I want to walk you through what I think is happening here, just so I can clarify in my head. So Nottingham Forest, as far as I know, did admit that they had breached FFP regulations, and that seemed to trigger what is now apparently the default 3-point deduction that we didn't know about before Everton and Forest, but we do know now that you automatically get a 3-point deduction for admitting that you breached FFP. They then got a 3-point deduction on top of that, 2 points of which was taken away for good behaviour, essentially. So bearing in mind that they have admitted the breach and they will get a 3-point deduction, it seems to me that they are appealing simply to have 1 point taken away from the deduction, which seems to be risky because you said last week that there is a possibility that the appeal panel could say that the original penalty wasn't high enough. Have I got that right?
That is correct. It's a risk. I think it's a remote risk, given that the commission did go through the contents of both the prosecution and Nottingham Forest defence in significant detail. I think what has upset Mr. Marakanakis, who is the owner of Forest, is that the rules seem to be very harsh with regards to the individual circumstances in which Forest find themselves. Now, ultimately, the rules are, to a certain extent, a one-size-fit-all. But then you can say, well, hold on. If Nottingham Forest were only allowed to lose £61 million compared to other clubs in the Premier League who are allowed to lose £105 million, we've seen Bournemouth published their accounts for the first year in the Premier League as well. And Nottingham Forest were promoted in 2022 with a squad that cost £12 million. And part of the reason for that was that they were not in receipt of parachute payments. They had been in the Championship for a number of years. And to a certain extent, they'd cut their cloth accordingly. they had a net spend in the Premier League of 140 million. And that net spend was nearly all purchases and very little sales. If you then contrast them, their position with that of Bournemouth, who were in a better financial position because they had been in receipt of parachute payments, Bournemouth were promoted with a squad that cost £150 million. So therefore they had players who had experience of the Premier League. Forrest's argument is, look, none of our players have got Premier League experience, therefore we had to invest if we want to be competitive. Bournemouth have also spent somewhere in the region of £200 million since being promoted in the three windows, which probably is close to, if not exceeds, the amount which has been spent by Forest. So I think they will use that to form part of their defence. It's a bit of a long shot, but you know, we've both seen 30 yarders go in, and if it gets back one point, and that point is the difference between survival in the Premier League and relegation, then that is worth tens of millions of pounds. So I think that's behind the thinking. Because they were a week or so ahead, a couple of weeks ahead of Everton in the cab rank of charges, I think their appeal will be A, heard, and B, the answer to that will be out before the end of the season. It looks like Everton's appeal, if they are deducted points and they then decide to appeal, is the one which could cause this worst case scenario of not knowing who's being relegated, having completed all of the matches.
So there is no chance that Forest would get the 3 points back or the 4 points back. It is definitely only one point, you think, that we're talking about here in this appeal.
Well, what we've learnt from the Commission is never say never. Has there been a breach? Yes. Are Nottingham Forest responsible for that breach? Yes. Could they have done something to alleviate that breach in January 23, in June 23? The answer to both of those questions is yes. You know, they chose to sign Chris Wood and one or two other players in the January window. They chose to turn down the offers they'd received for player A, Jenon Bronson, our good friend. even because on the grounds that they were being only offered liquidation prices or discount prices because people knew that they were close to the limit. So you can see the rationale behind their defence. Equally, you can see why I would imagine the Premier League feels confident that the initial penalty might be maintained.
Well, see, this is my worry, Kieran, and we have mentioned this before, just in terms of the credibility of the Premier League, and the Premier League must be aware of this themselves, and I'm not suggesting that this is an extra pressure on the Commission that hears the appeal, but should it turn out on the last day of the season that, let's say, the final relegation places between Luton and Forest, and it does come down to that one point, if I'm a Luton fan, I don't see how you can justify a team that has broken the rules staying up and a team that hasn't going down. Because I take Forrest's argument that they have to invest because they're a championship team trying to stay in the Premier League. But there are many, many teams who have been in that scenario and haven't done what Forrest did. So I can't see how Luton won't be absolutely outraged if that's the case. I mean, please God it isn't, but it could be. It's very tight down there, and I include Palace in this, from us downwards. It's very difficult down there. Everton have got their own issues. If that appeal doesn't happen till afterwards, that could have an impact on who goes down weeks after the season's finished. So the Premier League are not coming out of this looking very well. And I know that, you know, I don't see how Forest can appeal on the basis that they don't think the rules are right. Whether or not they think the rules are right, that's got nothing to do with the legality of what's happening now.
Yes, I think it will be. It would be a great job to be a fly on that particular wall with regards to the appeal. And again, I think there is a case for greater transparency and perhaps these... because it'd be great box office as well.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm sure Sky Independent Commission channel would go down and get, you know, you add that to Sky Sports News, it'd go down an absolute storm because you know, all not only would all Forest fans be listening carefully, but all Everton fans, I'd imagine quite a few Palace fans, Luton fans, Sheffield United, Burnley, they'd all be listening in. And the people involved are professional, and it's not the commission are not going to be influenced by anybody doing any grandstanding. So I think it would be a very good learning experience and an educational one. I tune in just to see how the discussions did take place and sort of the reaction of the commission and how the evidence was presented on both parts. The Manchester City case would be you need a sleeping bag for that one because that's going to go on for heaven knows how long. The Premier League, it's not getting any more money from the TV rights for the football, so why not get some money from the TV rights for the football finance?
Kieran, the Baroness gets annoyed enough with you as it is with Company's House. You imagine now, you say, "You're coming upstairs, darling. Now I'm watching the all night commission. We're coming up to
it's case on number. Catch up.
It's on plus one. We're coming up to case 74 in the Man City scenario." Kieran, we all know about Sod's Law, although I have to say I was never that fussed about which way down my toast landed when it fell off a table. now we know, I'm coming up with Poff's Law now, Kieran, the price of football law, Poff's Law, because no sooner had we discussed on a recent questions pod the owners of Ipswich Town and what a fantastic job they were doing and how the club was absolutely safe in their hands, then the buggers go and sell 40% of it.
Yes, they have. What's happened here is that the people who currently own Ipswich Town, and they still have a controlling interest as a result of this transaction, which is companies, they're called ORG. They are part of the Arizona Pension Fund, public sector pension fund. So they do have a responsibility towards getting the best deal for the firefighters, for the police people, police staff and so on. They have now sold 40% of Ipswich Town. And this is going to come in the form of fresh money, by the way. It's not a case of them selling shares. To Bright Paths Sports Investment, which is a private equity company. My first reaction upon seeing the words private equity is I'm quite prickly about them because private equity aren't interested in football. They're interested in the best interests of their clients. But I think there's a few things which are intriguing here. First of all, the fact that the private equity people are just going to have a minority interest. So ORG, who are the pension funds owners, still have the controlling interest. What really made me drop my bacon sandwich was the fact that 40% of Ipswich Town is being sold for £105 million. So that values the whole club at around about 260. Now, given that we've just seen West Bromwich Albion being sold for 60, Derby County, they were sold for around about 60. Admittedly, Derby County were a League One club at the time. I think this is an indication that the world of football as an investment opportunity has transformed very recently. And I know people will raise their eyes and sigh when I say this. It's down to things which we probably think are a bit twee. So the investment in Wrexham and the interest in Wrexham on the back of that in the States has gone through the roof. I know it's one of your least favourite programmes, but Ted Lasso, again, has made American investors want to get involved because they've realised that European football and English football in particular, because we've got the benefits of a common language and so on, has jeopardy, has the roller coaster, which is playoffs, relegation and promotion, or which the American sports don't have to the same extent. They certainly don't have any concept of relegation. And this has meant that there's an awful lot of money sloshing around at present in private equity, because there have been people who have made fortunes upon fortunes in the last five years or so. They don't know what to do with their money, and private equity is therefore willing to go and pay higher prices than it has done before. There's a fixed number of football clubs. There's fascinating interest. And there's also the fear that if you don't get in now, and you know, this has always been my issue with sort of crypto and other products. If you don't get in now, there's fear of missing out because the price might double or treble in a few years. If you compare the price of Ipswich Town, you know, 40% for £105 million to if you want to join MLS, you would A, have to pay an entry fee to, because it's a franchise organization, so you'd have to pay an entry fee of $400 to $500 million. Then you'd have to find a city to play in. Then you'd have to build the stadium. Then you'd have to build a fan base. And can you see, you're not going to get much short of $1 billion for a sport which is still seen as a minority sport in the States. So the alternative, which is to buy a ready-made product, and Ipswich, yeah, they've got a fantastic fan base, they've got a stadium, they've got sort of a geographical monopoly in respect of the area which they're from. You can see the attractions of that to the American investors. What are private equity doing? Well, you know, traditionally, private equity is normally it's in it and then out of it. So is this going to be a long-term investment? I'm not necessarily sure. But if Ipswich Town are promoted to the Premier League and stay there, then this new investment vehicle will be very successful because they'll be able to sell their 40% at a substantial profit.
Well, you've half answered my second question there, Kieran. My first question is, when you dropped your bacon sandwich, which way up did it land?
Well, because it was a sandwich, it had to, by definition, land on the side where the bread was not buttered.
Oh, yeah, very good point. That's a very good point. Well done. And secondly, this rather large investment, do you think that was done on expectation of Premier League football, or is Ipswich a good investment opportunity regardless of which league they're playing in?
According to my secret tractor boy contact...
how long have we had a secret tractor boy?
We've got secret... It's amazing how many people want to be snitches. Uncle Terry would be absolutely appalled.
Wouldn't he just?
But yeah, according to my secret tractor boy, this deal has been first suggested probably about 8-10 months ago, so before the start of the season. So if anything, it's potentially underpricing the value of Ipswich Town. You know, that they've done spectacularly well this season. I'd be absolutely delighted if they were promoted, because I've not been to Portman Road since I think about 88. 87, 88. So, yeah, it'd be great if they came up.
Yes, I would love to go back to Ipswich, except they've not. We've said this before. In an act of gross architectural vandalism, they've knocked down the Monkey Barrel, which was, it's the Monkey Barrel, the greatest away pub in the country, which is shameful, shocking act of sacrilege. Kieran, we've seen this week. Hopefully good news for Reading fans, and that Dai Yonga seems to have said to the EFL, yes, I will sell, stop nagging me. But also better news confirmed, we hope, for Rochdale. Although I'm saying that, because as we've discussed, sometimes what I think is good news, it turns out that your eyebrows go and meet the back of your neck.
No, I'm feeling quite positive with regards to this one. We have a potential sale now to the Ogden family. The club has given them exclusivity. They've got historical links to the area. They're certainly saying all the right things. Rochdale does need a bit of recapitalisation, i.e. a bit of fresh cash invested into the club. And clearly its aim is to return to the EFL. And what we're seeing as far as the National League is concerned is that it's now very much a loss-making product, partly due to the fact that we've had a series of wealthy owners who have come into clubs who have tried to take advantage of the fact that there's no equivalent of financial fair play in the National League. So therefore, I'm not saying you can buy promotion, but you can certainly give assistance. We're fully aware of at least one club that was paying League One wages, if not more than League One wages, in the National League in order to get out of the National League. So, yes, I think the Prowler will be beaming from ear to ear when I get my next message from him, which probably isn't that far away. And the genuine fear that the club would cease to exist, I think that certainly has evaporated for the moment. Negotiations with regards to a deal is not the same as a deal. As anybody that's ever tries to close a deal with regards to buying or selling a house, there can be problems arising. But it's two thumbs up rather than three on this one.
Well, these are words I never expected to hear myself saying, Kieran, but I'm going to channel my inner Prowler here and ask you about the Ogden family. I said, never mind historical links with the town, have they got the money?
Yes, yeah, they have. They are very wealthy indeed. So there's no evidence. We're not here to plug other organisations or publications. There's a really good series of stories running this week in The Athletic. I'm not saying it's all about Romans, but every day they've had the likes of Chris Kirchner, Dozy, Mwabwozi, and today they've got William Story in terms of attempts by people who appear to have an awful lot of talk, but not necessarily backing that up with hard cash when it comes to football deals. I think we have become quite jaundiced in respect of some of the people who are attracted to the industry. And I think there's a fascinating book to be written on Rollins. The trouble is trying to get it past the lawyers would be a bit of a hard task.
Bloomsbury don't tend to like whole pages that just say redacted. Kieran's in prison for this one. And I think we should point out, Kieran, that mysterious team in the National League who paid League One wages in an attempt to get out of the National League did in fact do so. And I believe have just appointed Ryan Giggs as the director of football, Kieran. But you don't have to confirm or deny. I can see your face confirming, Kieran, but it could be your denying face. I don't know.
I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Now, it seems, Kieran, we may be finally closer to a decision about 777 taking over Everton, in that we now know what the Premier League want them to prove before they say yes. Is that right? Have I interpreted that story correctly?
Yes. There has been a story, and again, you've got to give credit to the if anybody ever subscribes to Josimar, the sort of the Norwegian investigative website. The Premier League, we've got this strange phrase that's been doing around. The Premier League are minded to approve. It's a bit like my mum being minded to approve some of my girlfriends when I brought them home. the look of an Irish mother, as we both know.
Tell me about it. the look that says I've only just got used to the other one. I'll start introducing. Sorry, the old one, not the other one.
Yes. When your mother's opening line is, Have you thought about starting a family, which appears to be very much focused from Catholic mothers? I don't even know a name yet, Mum. Yeah, let's just slow down, shall we? So the Premier League, by all accounts, is minded to approve 777 as potential owners. However, it's fair to say that there are strings attached. By all accounts, Farhad Moshiri is going to have to write off all of the loans which are due to him. So we are talking, effectively hundreds of millions of pounds. 777's existing loans would have to be converted into shares. So therefore, there's no repayment to 777. The existing loans which they've taken out would have to be repaid probably over the next 10 years. Presumably from the additional revenues that are generated from the stadium, and 777 would have to give further details with regards to where they're getting their money from. So that, yeah, they're four quite tough hurdles, but at least we've got a bit of news, if not necessarily all of the news, that I think would give Evertonians some clarity one way or the other, and sort of the reaction from Everton fans that I speak to is, we really don't want these people at the club. Why has Farhad Moshiri got into bed with them? We know that there are other potential interested parties with regards to the club. I suspect the reason for this is that 777 have paid for exclusivity, and therefore the option of negotiating with another party isn't on the table at present.
I don't know where to begin with this, Kieran, to be perfectly honest, because you say the Premier League are mindful. This seems to me that the Premier League are desperately trying not to approve this, but are saying, look, here you go, this is all you have to do. All you have to do is prove these four things, and you're in. But this process has been going on for months now, Kieran. First of all, I don't see why Farhad Moshiri has to write off his loans or pay his loans back. And secondly, talking about this going on for months, we still don't know where 777's money is coming from. It's only now that the Premier League are saying, we really need to know where this money is coming from. That's question one, day one, morning one, isn't it, surely?
It is, and to be fair to the Premier League, it is the question that they've been asking. And what they've not been able to do is to get a very clear answer from 777. There is, I think, this ACAP or ACOR, which now wants to distance itself from 777 because 777 is having a negative impact upon the reputation of the funder. Why is it taking so long when we've seen other deals go through so much quicker? It comes down to presenting the evidence quickly enough, and that's the problem. Josh Wander and his merry bunch of individuals just aren't very good at answering straight questions with a straight answer and providing evidence for them. And let's face it, they're not the only people in society which have found in recent years the incapacity to answer a straight question with a straight answer.
I mean, that's very true, but Boris Johnson's not trying to buy Everton Football Club, so we can put that to one side. And why does Moshiri have to write off his loans or pay off his debts before he gets the money from 777 that's going to enable him to do that?
Writing off the debts to a certain extent is a paper exercise. He just
oh, I see.
Right. I've said to you sort of historically, with Abramovich and Tony Bloom and some others, it's effectively the bank of mum and dad, in the sense that they were never, whilst legally the debt is due for repayment, practically that's not the case. And I think what the Premier League would insist on is a formal write-off of those debts, because whoever is in charge of Everton Football Club should not be acquiring it with this sort of a weight around your ankles of a ball and chain of potentially having to repay. We've seen with regards to a couple of other clubs who have been sold, where the owner has written off the debt, but then there's been a couple of add-on clauses, such as, you know, if Everton get into the Champions League, does that mean that there's an additional £10 million for Mishiri or whatever? You know, that could be acceptable to the Premier League for all we know. But I think what they're trying to do is to give the Premier League some credit, is to give the club some protection, because what you don't want is Mishiri in 2 years' time saying, right, I've not asked for it for 2 years, I want the money back now, because then we're back to square one.
And do we know if the Premier League have put a time limit on these hurdles?
Nothing's been seen to that effect. It's very, very frustrating. You've got to feel for Everton fans. You know, they've had the issues with the commission to deal with, and then they've got these other issue with regards to who owns our football club. I think the good thing is that, you know, there will be an Everton football club. You know, the worst scenario fears, which I always felt were remote, are still just as remote as ever in terms of liquidation.
Mm. At the risk of sounding like a half-arsed Sky Sports news presenter, Kieran, which sometimes is a tautology, on the other side of Stanley Park, Liverpool fans are being compensated by UEFA.
Yes, this goes back to the 2022 Champions League final. We all saw the chaotic scenes there, the lack of organisation, the unwillingness of a variety of authorities to take responsibility for what the fans went through. And having had an experience of just a few European matches, you are very much reminded of the fact that you're a second-class citizen as a football fan. And this is something which historically, you know, you and I both have been on the receiving end of authorities, police forces, sort of in the 70s and 80s, at a time when football fans themselves didn't do themselves any favours on occasions. Times have changed in terms of fan behaviour, and also I think in terms of sort of the respect for authorities, it tends to be you treat us well, we'll behave well in the majority of cases. Liverpool fans were not treated well. There were issues. What should be a lifelong memory in terms of the positivity? You're going to a Champions League final. You know, it's we both know what it's like to play. You know, to be in a big match. You know, playoffs, promotions, even relegation matches. We've still got those memories, and it's a shame that those memories will be tainted for so many people. And you can understand why Liverpool fans were also quite upset with some of the comments which initially came from the authorities in France and from UEFA, which have subsequently been retracted.
Do we know the amount of compensation, Kieran, and do we know how it would be distributed?
No. It's a private deal. It's effectively an out-of-court settlement. From what I would understand is that those fans who have effectively got involved in a class action, the pot will be divided equally amongst them, you would assume, because otherwise it's impossible to say that one individual has suffered more or worse than more or less than another.
Knowing Liverpool fans, it'd probably be going to a charity of some sort, I would guess. This is almost Shakespearean, Kieran, this story, this downfall story. Because this time last year, Kieran, Luis Rubiales, the president of the Spanish FA, would have been sitting at home with his feet up on the table, calling for his tapas to be brought in by his wife, probably with a cigar on, just thinking life is good, isn't it? We've got a big tournament coming up. I'm probably going to be the head of UEFA in a couple of years' time. And now he's broken a mirror somewhat. No, he hasn't. He's broken loads of rules. Is what he's done, Kieran. His transgressive behaviour is coming home to roost. But it's not been a good couple of days for him, is it?
No. What has happened is that the Spanish police have raided. I love the word raided.
It's a great word.
When it comes to police,
Yeah.
They've raided 11 premises in a coordinated sting with regards to the Spanish Football Federation, including a number of premises, including one in Granada, which is believed to be the home of Luis Rubiales. The newspapers are taking great glee with showing a photograph of a policeman loading a cardboard box into the back of his police car with the word Rubiales on it. Now, it could be, you know, that's where Luis Rubiales keeps his football card collection or his shirt collection. It's just been borrowed by the policeman. But some people are saying more than that. What is the issue that we're looking at? Well, the Spanish Super Cup, which is sort of the equivalent of the Community Shield. I think it's the League Cup winners play the FA Cup winners, or the equivalent of that. That match was switched to Riyadh. It took place in Saudi Arabia. And if that's what the Spanish football authorities want to do, and they believe that it's going to assist the game in a broader context with regards to additional funds for Spanish football, fill your boots. I think fans might be a bit upset, but since when have fans' concerns taken priority over money, as we've seen in recent times? But there then seems to be sort of some meetings, some communication between Rubiales and the former player Gerard Piqué with regards to commission for this event. So who has negotiated for the Spanish Super Cup to take place in Riyadh, and who has been financially rewarded as a result? Does this involve Gerard Piqué? We don't know enough details to comment. Does it involve Luis Rubiales? Some people seem to think that they've had a conversation and they've benefited from that. So it looks as if that is the course of action which has been undertaken by the police in order to try to get definitive evidence one way or the other.
Does it involve Saudi Arabia? And that's a discussion for another pod. Let's not upset producer guy at this stage of the occasion. Two very interesting stories coming out of Newcastle United, Kieran. The first involving our old friend Mike Ashley.
He can't let go, can he? he cannot let go.
He literally is like, it's like one of those blokes in a pub. You get him out, you go, look, it's over, it's done, walk away. You get him out the door, and then suddenly he's coming in back through the other door. Oh, Jesus, go. Someone, get him an Uber. Uber won't take him.
Mike Ashley is, by all accounts, suing Newcastle United. It's fully aware to all parties that Newcastle are switching their production of kit from Castore to Adidas. And that's fine. Doesn't mean that Adidas are better than Castore or worse than Castore, or I think they're paying more, but then, you know, I think Newcastle's profile has increased. But they decided to go with the Adidas route. And it then comes to the issue, okay, if you want to buy a Newcastle kit, where are you going to buy it from? Now, Mike Ashley says, well, yeah, people can come and buy it in Sports Direct. I personally suspect that not a single Newcastle United fan in the city of Newcastle would buy it from Sports Direct, given the historical antipathy between the two parties. But that's a separate issue. It looks as if the club is going to say, we are looking to be a monopoly supplier. So if you want to buy the kit, you either have to buy it from the club's website or alternatively from the club's megastore. And Mike Ashley is saying, well, why can't you buy it from my retailer instead? So that is forming the basis for the claim. It's fair to say that Mike Ashley has history with regard to this, when he had some sort of relationship historically with Rangers a few years ago. That also involved the sale of kits. And you know, one thing you would say with both Rangers fans and Newcastle fans, they are incredibly loyal in terms of they will buy the kit. You know, they so we are talking significant numbers here. They do shift a large number of units. And he's looking at it from a business point of view. He made things awkward for Rangers. I think there's a financial settlement there. I think he's trying to get some form of financial compensation from Newcastle if they're going to use this position of exclusivity in terms of the distribution or the retailing of their kits under the Adidas deal.
These days, Kieran, aren't most football clubs monopoly suppliers of their own kit? I mean, if I want to buy the new Palace shirt, I go to the club shop or I go online. The old days of walking into just about any sports shop on Oxford Street, in the unlikely event that they would ever Palace shirt, you'd get a Man United or a Liverpool shirt. But it seems to me that I can't recall seeing official club shirts in the. There used to be two just in Leeds, one in Carnaby Street that just sold new football shirts. But those days seem to have long gone, haven't they?
That they have. I think you hit the nail on the head that, you know, clubs of both our sizes. You know, if you want a Brighton kit, you get it from the club, or you get it from the club the club online. Newcastle, I think they think that because they've got a national fan base, which I think it is fair to say, yeah, they do have a bigger fan base than either of our clubs. We're not denying that. Therefore, you should be able to walk into a branch of Sports Direct in London and say, yeah, they'll have the Manchester United, the Liverpool, the Chelsea, the Arsenal shirt. Newcastle feel that they should be there as well. Well, sorry, Mike Ashley feels that they should be there as well. And Newcastle saying, well, we don't really want anything to do with you. And clearly there's been beef between the new owners and Mike Ashley. You know, he litigated against Amanda Staveley. He had to be sort of encouraged to sell the club before that final deal went through.
I almost admire his optimism. He'd make more money selling Sunderland shirts, wouldn't he?
He probably would, yes.
I would have thought. And speaking of Amanda Staveley, Kieran, this next story only indirectly involves Newcastle United, but it does have a potential impact. She could be looking at a huge payout, Kieran, couldn't she, after losing a court case?
That's right. She likes a court battle as much as Mike Ashley does. You know, she's had her arguments with Barclays, I think, and Mike Ashley. This particular court case was in relation to a loan from somebody, and it seemed a bit strange. Initially, it was a £3.5 million loan on which appeared to clock up about £30 million on interest. Uncle Terry would rise from his grave at that type of interest rate. But the interest claim was dropped. She said she didn't owe £3.5 million. It looks like that's not been successful. What's this got to do with football? It is a tenuous link, but it's a link all the same. Owners and directors have to pass the owners and directors test. If this was deemed to be a breaking the law, then where does this leave her? I think she'd probably still be okay, but yeah, it could call into her question her ability to maintain her position on the board of Newcastle if everything stacks up against her.
In the next week or so, Kieran, we'll be interviewing a chap called John Blair, who's written a splendid book called A Culture of Kits, which is basically a guide to classic football shirt collecting. It's a fascinating book. And I'm going to be asking him about these last two news stories when we do talk to him, because they both are associated with football kits. Leaving aside the ludicrous, overhyped debate about the purple Cross of St George on the back of the New England kit, and leaving aside the fact that the new away England kit that they wore against Belgium is a shocking, horrible piece of work. It's just embarrassing to watch Belgium turn out dressed like Tintin from 1925 and us turning out in that bizarre grey, zigzaggy. But leaving that aside, Kieran, the price of the New England shirt, I mean, producer guys use the phrase raised a few eyebrows. It's just shocking. It's shameful. we know, mainly from a lot of the things that you've told us, and we know from talking to the secret kit manufacturer, who's, I think, shares a flat with the secret tractor boy, I understand. But we all know, every football fan knows now how much it costs to produce a shirt. We know that. So to be asking those sort of prices that England are asking for the new shirt is just, I'm going to use the word obscene, Kieran. No mind raising it for your eyebrows. It's shocking. And it's obscene, Kieran, because they know it's a captive market. They know that kids want the new shirt. And they know that where possible, they're guessing that people who can afford tickets for England games can afford a shirt. That's my theory, and I think it's shameful.
It is. Nike will keep increasing the price of shirts because people will keep buying them. Yeah, and you look at that purely from a business point of view. We look at football shirts from a romantic perspective, and we think that they should be available to all. You know, that they should be priced for the person on the Clapham on my bus, the kids in playgrounds and so on. That ship has sailed. The crazy thing is has the cost of production gone up? Yes, it has. So I think whereas 12 months ago we were probably looking at the cost of a shirt around about £12. Okay, it might have gone up to 13, 14, perhaps even 15. That will be for the stadium shirt. The authentic shirt, probably only talking about another £2 or £3 in terms of production costs. But what do the manufacturers do? They slap on an extra £40 in terms of the price paid by the consumer. And that's actually quite similar to how an organization such as Apple would sell you an iPhone. You get your base iPhone with a little bit of memory. If you want a bit more memory, they overprice the step-ups. So we do see that in terms of other businesses. You know, if you want to, I used to remember when we got our first car and we had an L version and the next door neighbour had an LX version and the bloke down the bottom road who lived in the big house had the GLX version, and you were paying an awful lot extra for alloy wheels and windscreen wipers that were very variable speed and all this type of crap. Nike are brilliant from a business point of view when it comes to the supply chain, and they will know just how much stock that they're likely to sell. They will price it accordingly. And one of the things you notice about Nike kit, I don't know what Palace have done, whether Palace have cut the cost of their kit for next season. Nike, then they're not doing it. They've worked out how to be very successful. So there is, from a business point of view, they'll pay it, so let's charge it. The crazy thing is that Nike will probably still lose money overall because they're paying so much money to the Football Association for the right to be the kit manufacturer, that they're not going to recoup that over the life of the deal. So could you argue that this money ultimately is going to grassroots football? I think that's quite tenuous myself. But the elite clubs, when we talk to the secret kit manufacturer, and this really struck me as a huge surprise, Adidas are losing money with Manchester United. Nike are losing money with Liverpool. Nike are probably also losing money with their elite country deals in terms of the likes of England and Brazil and so on.
Which does beg the question, why are Nike doing it then?
Because if you take a look at the front of shirt deal, if you're at Manchester United, have got what Snapdragon or something like a Qualcomm, who are willing to pay £50 million a year for their logo on the front of the Manchester United shirt. Well, Nike or Adidas, they're willing to pay substantial sums of money, because what will happen is that if you're a Manchester United fan in Hong Kong, in New York, and you want a Manchester United shirt, where are you going to buy it? You go into the Adidas store, you buy the Manchester United shirt, And whilst you're there, you see, oh, God, those sneakers look good. Oh, I fancy a pair of those. So they use the football club, A, as a benchmark of quality, because people associate success with these clubs. They're fantastic global brands. So therefore, association between Nike and Liverpool, or Nike in England, or Adidas and Manchester United and so on, it helps to maintain the value of the brand. And I downloaded the Nike accounts. For every £100 that you're paying to Nike, they get £10. They pay £10 out in marketing costs. So they will just see the cost of the deal with these clubs and with these countries as part of their overall marketing expense. It increases the overall brand value, and it allows them to sell other products on the back of it.
I hope you legally downloaded their accounts, Kieran. You didn't go to...
Of course.
You weren't on a dodgy stream.
I'm no Julian Assange. I'm not being deported.
So just in terms... One last point on this, Kieran. Just in terms of the actual price that the FA are charging for the shirt. So let's be generous and say it's £15 manufacture costs. You then say Nike are probably charging £40 per shirt to the FA. So that leaves 65, 70 quid. So that's the FA have decided that amount?
Distribution, retailer, logistics, overheads. It does get swallowed up at that top end, because so much is going as the licensing fee. So everybody's a bit grumpy. You know, Nike are losing money on it. We as fans are saying it's a bit steep. Which is very steep, and how much ultimately gets through to grassroots football is open to question.
Well, we know we have people from the FA listening to this, Kieran, so why don't we ask them to tell us the answer to that question? Because we know football is the most transparent of games. I'm sure they'd have no compulsion about sending us a little email saying this is the amount of money, etc. So let's not hold our breath, Kieran. I did mean to ask you, and I'm going to throw this question open to our overseas listeners, as I meant to ask you to check out when you were in Brussels whether you could see the new Belgium shirt on sale anywhere, because I'd like to know how much other FAs charge for their replica shirts, because there's man alive, Belgium fans, none of them turned up at Wembley without a shirt of some sort, or without I might invest in red face paint coming up for the Euros, because a red face paint shop in Brussels is going to make a lot of money. But I'd be interested to hear how much football shirts retail around the globe, international football shirts retail around the globe.
The Belgian football shirt, €100. So it's effectively the same price as the England kit.
Okay. Interesting. Well, our final question, Kieran, and you talk about long-standing associations between manufacturers and certain teams. And in the John Blair Culture of Kits book, whenever you see a West Germany or a Germany national shirt, you know immediately who it's made by, but no longer.
Yes, I think this has taken everybody aback. The German kit, which has been manufactured by Adidas since the 1950s, by all accounts, that deal is going to end. It expires in 2027, and it's going to be replaced with a deal by Nike, which, you know, I already have got what we've just been talking about. People say, well, surely Adidas would have fought tooth and nail to maintain that relationship. Adidas financially have been through a bit of a fallow period, so they're trying to get back, but they were willing to offer the German football authorities €50 million, and if the stories are correct, Nike have doubled it, €100 million a year. You've got to sell a hell of a lot of German, and I like German football kits myself. We always like the German kits made by Adidas. And Adidas said €100 million, thanks but no thanks. We don't think it's good value. And what they're going to try to do instead, you know, where they're going to target their marketing spend, wait and see. That's all I can say. Wait and see.
Yeah, when I was a fifth former, Kieran, on the bus going home from school, a rather large sixth former threw a punch at me because he'd overheard me explaining to another fifth former that Adidas was short for Adi Dassler, the man who, and this large sixth former thought I was talking bollocks. So obviously I then went on to explain a number of companies that were named after, because that's how I was in those days, rather than just sitting there quietly. Well, no, you just kid needs to learn. So I could never, I know exactly where the bus was when he threw that punch at me. Every time the word Adidas is mentioned, it's partly, as my dad said at the time, it's your fault, son, you shouldn't be so chippy. So I remember getting, I got punched off my chair by a teacher who said he was getting fed up with my insolent smirk. And I went home full of, I was aggrieved, Kieran, and told my dad this. And my dad said, it is really annoying the way you smirk. Thank you for your support there, Dad. And thank you to everyone who's, punched me off my chair, the teacher. It's just how it was in those days, wasn't it? It's one of the downsides of being a Catholic.
I was taught by nuns. Yeah, they were evil. They were on the side of Satan, not God.
That's my theory. Was you never see a young nun, Kieran, because it takes 35 years to teach them how to be that nasty. Basically, your mum accepted, of course. Thank you to everyone who's donated. Anybody listening is going to have to go back to a few pods and work out the contents of that comment. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod as well, that'd be very kind of you, and it'll get you access to our chat community and our regular quizzes. And you can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com, and go to the same website if you want to buy our book or a Price of Football t-shirt. We'll be back on Monday with our questions pod. In the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Thank you, everybody, for engaging with us, with correcting us, for sending us stories and obscure references to bands from the 70s connected to stories we've run on the podcast. We genuinely appreciate it. It's very touched. If you want to join our little chat group, you can do that via the Patreon. If you want to get rid of the adverts, you can do the same. I know that they irritate people. We do offer the free version, and we are committed to that free version forever as well. There's another way of supporting the show, and that's to keep the profile up, and that's to give us a review. If you go to your app that you use to listen to the show, it doesn't matter what you say on the review. So you could even say you would rather have it presented by Jenon Bronson, the fictitious footballer who nobody's got an idea who is, and Charles Bronson of the Death Wish films and looking quite grumpy in the 70s and 80s.
Well, that'd be a good one. It just made me laugh when, I can't remember which journalist it was, but somebody said they were going to use Jenon Bronson as their...
Yes, that was Max.
Yeah. Was it Max Rushton? Yes. Well, I thought it might have been Max Rushton. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it wouldn't have been Barry Glendinning, would it? Apparently word has got around on Twitter that me and Barry Glendinning have beef, which I'm happy to keep that story going. Basically. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football.
Picture this, the roar of a crowd, the tension building, the electrifying moment your team scores the winning goal. Pure joy, right? But for many football fans, barriers can shut them out of that experience. In the UK, nearly 1 in 4 people, that's 16 million, have a disability. And over 70% of those disabilities are non-visible.
There's a really broad range of non-visible disabilities out there. So it can be hearing loss, it can be sight loss, it can be neurodiversity, it can be any manner of things that people can't perceive.
People look, why are they parking in a blue badge space? They can walk. Why are they using an accessible toilet? They're walking in. But that's not the point. You can't see the invisibleness of the disability. But then if somebody's judging you, You can tell they haven't got the awareness. They haven't got the understanding.
I've always lived my life as a sighted person who can't see. To the point where then if I didn't have my long cane chancellor, a lot of people wouldn't know. Me having it isn't always just for me, but it is actually for other people as well.
Find out how you can contribute to a more inclusive match day experience for everyone by supporting Level Playing Field, the national charity advocating for greater access and inclusion for all disabled sports fans through its Unite for Access campaign. Unite for your team, unite as a fan. Let's unite for access.